Welcome everyone to this CCWG on Enhancing Accountability meeting number 81. So we will be having a call with a scheduled break, a 10-minute break at some point. So let's get started with this. The roll call will be taken as usually per those attending the Double Connect room. But if there is someone that is not in the Double Connect room that is on the phone bridge, kindly please state your name at this point so we can add you to the roll call.
Yeah, this is Sean, the audio only.
Thank you, Sean. You have been added to the roll call. Anyone else on the phone bridge that is not in the Double Connect room? Okay, here no one else. I remind you to kindly mute your microphones if you are not speaking. This will help us to have a better meeting. And if you haven't filed your statement of interest by this date, I strongly encourage you to file your statement of interest. If you have any problems accessing the website for doing so, you can contact staff, and staff will be happy to assist you in filing your statement of interest. So with no further delay, I would like to turn to my co-chair, Thomas, for the next agenda item. Thomas?
Thank you very much, Leon, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. The next item on our agenda is another aspect of recommendation one, and that is the question of the GAC being a decisional participant. And we had the first reading on that topic exactly 1 week ago, and the conclusion that we reached during the first reading was that the GAC should be included as a decisional participant. We would like to confirm with the group that we can result will be the same for the second reading. So let me ask whether there are any interventions, and I see a queue forming. So let us move to the queue. Robin is first, and then Brett.
Hi, this is Robin Gross for the record. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right. Yes, we can hear
great.
You.
Great. Oh, there's an echo on the phone line. Is there an echo on the bridge, too?
There's an echo. Please, those who are not speaking, do mute your microphones, please.
Oh, boy. there seems to be an echo. Okay. I'm not sure if I should proceed or if you want to...
Yes. Please do, Robin.
Okay. Okay, so I would like to object to this particular aspect of the recommendation, to no surprise to anyone, as NCSG has been all along. I think it is a grave mistake for us to be making this kind of a fundamental change in ICANN's design to have governments as decisional authorities within the governance structure of ICANN and a lot of the key functions and operations, removing board members and approving budgets and things like that. ICANN was specifically set up to be private sector-led, meaning governments wouldn't have a say in these decisions, and now we are explicitly overturning that prior design choice and saying, no, we think this group of people, the CCWG, is changing ICANN such that now governments have a very significant role in its governance. And I think that, you know, we need to be aware that this is what we're doing, and it's really going to come back to haunt us when people realize this is what's happening. I mean, GAC hasn't even said themselves that they want or approve of this kind of a decisional authority, and yet we're thrusting it on them just because we're also tired of the process. We want to get done with whatever is in front of us. I think this is a terrible mistake, and if GAC has not even said that it even wants this or it even approves of this. I can't for the life of me understand why we are insisting that we must change ICANN's fundamental structure in this way. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Robin. And let's please remember that the position that you've just confirmed has already been recorded during previous calls. So as we are in the second reading, let's see whether there are new arguments or other points that get traction so that the group's previous consensus needs to be revisited. But, Robin, your objection to this point is well recorded. Next is Brett.
Thank you. One is I don't believe that this is actually the second reading. We didn't really have an elaborate discussion because the GAC had not provided its formal comment on the recommendations in terms of Recommendation 1 and Recommendation 11 at the time that we were supposed to discuss this last week. So I would suggest that this is actually a first reading on those two things. Second, I want to highlight or at least expound on one of the points that Robin made earlier, which is that the GAC actually hasn't informed us whether they're going to be an active participant in the Empower community or not. The December 21st statement says that the GAC anticipates that it would intend to participate in the proposed community mechanism, but it has the following qualifications, and it lists those qualifications. But it doesn't say that it actually will participate. And the most recent comment, formal comment on the third draft from the GAC, says that it doesn't have a consensus on it, whether it's going to participate or not. So we are proceeding with the idea that the GAC will participate, but lacking any certain knowledge that it actually will. This raises problems, as we discussed before, in terms of the community powers. If we say that GAC is a voting participant in this proposal, but they end up not being a voting participant, the thresholds are an issue. If we have GAC as a voting participant, a decisional participant in the Empower community, but it finds itself unable to actually reach a decision on almost all matters, that also raises questions in terms of the thresholds. I think we need to, as a community, move forward with the recommendation that GAC actually be advisory to the Empower community. We move forward with four groups, voting participants, and have GAC advisory as we are with SAC and RSAC. And then if GAC does in the future decide to engage fully as a decisional participant, that can be discussed and added as an amendment to the decisional participants in the Empower community, which is already encapsulated and provided for in the bylaws as we're drafting them, or at least in the transition proposal as we're drafting it. So I think that that is a very reasonable way to proceed in terms of the GAC's failure to give us a definitive answer on whether it is going to be a full decisional participant or not. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Brett. And let me just briefly respond to your point, which was echoed by Paul, that this cannot qualify as a second reading. Please remember, this discussion that we're having is a discussion whether the GAC should be allowed as a decisional participant in our scheme, and therefore it's a question of more general nature. So this discussion we could have, and we already had previously during the first two reports, basically, and their respective public comment periods. So this question could be discussed by our group last week, and we're now confirming the consensus or traction for revisiting that consensus. Next in line is Kavuz. Kavuz, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I think we are on second reading, and the second reading is not the first reading. We should avoid to have a full explanation. Providing the right is different from exercising the right. We need to provide the right for GAC to participate, and it is up to GAC to decide whether they participate or not participate. But one simple question, if the other SO and AC touch the issues relating to the GAC, and GAC is not allowed to participate, how you deal with the matter? I try to be short as possible, and I request you, Thomas and Matthew and Leon, to reply to me. If you change Article 11 and GAC is touched and GAC has no right to comment in, so what you do with that? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose, and thanks in particular for your request to others to be brief and being a good role model for them. Let's move to the next speaker in the queue, and that is Olga, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just to be brief, I would like to support what my colleague Caboose has just expressed. Argentina is of the belief that the GAC must have the right to participate, as other SOs and ICs will do. Then the GAC will decide what is best for its group. But at the first stage of this decision, the GAC should have the right to participate. Argentina doesn't think that it's a mistake having the government in this position. On the contrary, we believe that it would be totally imbalanced not having the government in this position participating. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Olga. Pedro is next.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Hello, brother.
Hello. Yes, thank you. It seems that some colleagues who have talked before are suggesting that we should interpret the lack of consensus of the GAC in the same way as if the GAC had rejected its participation in decision-making steps. And it's not true, actually. Well, the GAC did not reject this. It could just not reach a consensus about it. So I think, I believe we would really commit a grave mistake if we would react as if the GAC had formally objected to this recommendation, to recommendation one. And secondly, I would just briefly like to draw your attention to the fact that there was really substantial support for recommendation one in the public consultation, 48 comments in favor, 8 against, and out of those 8, actually 5 were actually related to this issue of power distribution between SO and AC and GAC as decisional participants. So, of course, it's true that we need to respect this objection presented, but we need to bear in mind that this recommendation made its way through to our third report, and there was really substantial support of the community to it. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pedro. Next in line is Sebastian, and I would like to close the queue after Sebastian.
Thank you, Thomas, and I will be very short because I just want to support what Alan wrote in the chat and what Steve Del Bianco wrote in the chat too. It was my main two arguments, and I really think that we are building a new body. Don't try to apply the same way of life and of organization of the other body within ICANN. If not, we are just duplicating the bodies, and that's not good. Then let's try to be innovative, and it's what we have trying to do since the beginning. And once again, I support both Alan and Steve comments on the chat. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Let me try to take stock of the discussion that we had. Let me note formally Robin's objection, which was supported by Brett and Paul. It looks like the group of those objecting to the inclusion or possibility to include the GAC as a decisional party is coming from a group of people that have previously raised objections. So we do not see an increase in objection, i.e. there doesn't seem to be more traction for revisiting the previous consensus on that point. Pedro, you had also refreshed our memories on the number of commenters that had spoken in favor of including the GAC as a decisional party, or at least offering the opportunity for the GAC to be one. I would also like to reiterate that it will be possible for Robin and others to add minority statements to the final report in order to record and evidence their position. In response to what I think it was Brad said, I would like to go a little bit back in history with respect to two other groups in our community, i.e. ESSEC and RSEC, who are not decisional participants. But the big difference here is that the GAC has not rejected inclusion in this decision-making scheme, while ESSEC and RSEC have formally responded to us that they wish to be excluded. So I think that the responses of other groups have been different, so that doesn't suggest that we have a precedent for dealing with the GAC in another fashion than we are about to confirm now. So with that, I would like to confirm the result of the first reading for our second reading, and that means that the GAC is an eligible decisional participant. And with that, we can close this agenda item, and I would like to hand back over to Leon.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And the next agenda item is the one on ESSO and AC accountability, recommendation number 10. And at this point, the conclusions from the first reading are in the screen now. And we have discussed that from the comments received on the third public comment period, ESSO and AC accountability is definitely an issue that needs to be taken care of. And what we would like to confirm is whether these comments can be handled as part of Workstream 2 deliberations. Our report suggests that ESSO and AC accountability should be taken care of on Workstream 2. And I believe that there have been other comments lately by the GNSO and the GAC also in this subject, especially in regard to, and also the ALEC, I believe, that commented on SO and AC accountability in regard to having the incumbent SO or AC being reviewed, part of the review team. So I think that is something that we have heard from different charging organizations so far. And I believe that that is also an issue that could be, of course, further explored and discussed as part of our Workstream 2 work. And at this point, I would like to hear your input on whether these comments that we received in the third public comment period are actually something that we can handle as part of our Workstream 2 plan. And first on the queue, I have Alan Greenberg. Alan?
Thank you very much. Just to note, the ALAC did suggest that as part of Workstream 1 in our version of the bylaws that we add a condition in the section of the bylaws on reviews, and that is particularly Article 4, Section 4.1, that the review should include a review of accountability of the appropriate AC and SO. I don't think the ALAC would object strenuously if we decided to do that in Workstream 2, but since it is part of a bylaw revision that we're doing now, it wouldn't be inappropriate to do it. If we're agreeing to do it, we might as well put it in the bylaws and say so. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Anyone else with a comment on SOAC accountability? I remember that there was a couple of comments, very valuable, especially from Cavus regarding the proposed structural review of the GAC. And I remember that the challenge there is that, of course, this review involves sovereign states. So I would like to listen from someone in the GAC if you have any input as to how we should manage this issue on Workstream 2. And I see Caboose has kindly raised his hand. Caboose, could you please take the floor?
Yes, Leon. I think you need to add what I said in a qualifier after what you want to say, saying that, however, GAC members have a special status because they are responsive to their government, and government, they do not have the situation that be responsible for the third parties. It is a sovereign right of the government, and it has been recognized. I want to be sure to respect what I said the other day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. And I guess that this would definitely lead us to including this this kind of language in Workstream 2 as part of our Workstream 2 work. And of course, we would develop a discussion around the issue that you have kindly pointed. And I see Thomas Rickert hand us up. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. And I've put myself in the queue to maybe add some thoughts to the idea of SOAC accountability with respect to the GAC. Certainly, it is not our role, and even it would be most inappropriate for our group to try to prescribe what sovereign governments should or should not be doing. However, the GAC, as other groups inside the ICANN community, do have a role in this community, and they interact with other parts of the community. And we have recently seen very encouraging improvements in particular the GAC's interaction with other parts of the community. Let me point out the fact that we now have a GNSO liaison to the Governmental Advisory Committee. Let me state that the GAC and the GNSO have established a steering group that works on improving the collaboration between the two groups when it comes to policymaking, in particular, to avoid that the GNSO is working on policies all the way through to then find out in the last minute that there are issues in the GAC. So there are a lot of signals, and I'm sure that there are examples for other parts of the ICANN community as well, where the GAC as a group, I'm not speaking of the governments represented in the GAC, but where the GAC as a group inside the ICANN community is shown to be accountable to the rest of the community by trying to be more transparent about their own procedures, trying to come up with concerns earlier in the process. And maybe that's something that the GAC members represented on this call could comment on. You know, maybe that could be a starting point for writing up some ideas for ICANN or for GAC accountability that can be worked on and reviewed on a regular basis without interfering with the internal policy making and decision making processes inside the GAC.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I see Farzani, hand is up. Farzani?
Yes, hello, Farzani Badi speaking. So I have just a clarification. Are we still planning to insert the amendment to the Section 4 of the Article 4 of the bylaws? Because if we are planning to do that, and I wanted to say this last week, but I could not speak. If we are planning to do that, we have to be very clear with the community, because in our third proposal, in our public comment, when we sent out the proposal for public comment, we really did not state the whole article. So the stakeholder groups might not know what sort of changes can be made. For example, the board unilaterally can ask for independent review of the structure and can decide on all these things. So just a clarification, if we are not going to amend the bylaw, then Article 4 of Section 4, then I do not have any other comments.
Thank you very much, Farzani. And our recommendation as part of Workstream 1 is to include the reviews of SOs and ACs accountability mechanisms in the independent periodical structural reviews that are performed on a regular basis, and I'm reading this from our third report. And this recommendation can be implemented through an amendment of Section 4 of Article 4 of the ICAP bylaws. And I mean, that situation hasn't changed, so we would be still proposing that as part of our report. And what we're trying to do here is just to confirm that the comments that were received on the third public comment period are, in fact, something that we can deal with as part of our workstream two workstream. And so I hope that that clarifies your question. And next on the queue, I have Olga Cavalli.
Thank you, Leon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank Thomas for his comments about the search of the GAC for more transparency and inclusion in its deliberations. And as an example, as he requested, maybe we could add some example to this, apart from the GAC GNSO interaction, which I think is relevant. We, for the first time in the history of the GAC, we opened a document that we are, internal document of the GAC that we are working in, one working group, to the whole community for comments. We did that 1 year ago. It's a document about the protection of geographic names in new GTLDs. As you may recall, there were many conflicts because some names from the communities in Latin America were taken as new GTLDs by companies from other countries, and there were conflicts. So what we want to avoid in the GAC and in this working group is conflicts in new rounds. So the document was open to public comments. We received more than 70 comments, and we are still working on analyzing all of them. So that was, for the first time, an internal GAC document open to the whole community, and we hope to repeat that experience that, in my modest opinion, was very successful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Olga. Next on the queue, I have Chris Stein.
Hi, Leon. Thank you. I just wanted to note that I've just sent the board's note of the board's current comments on this to the list. It's generally supportive, but I wanted to raise one specific point, which was those two comments, just to make sure that we're clear that the implementation, that the reviews are independent, the SO and AC reviews are independent. That's, as I said, it's encompassed in the comments, but I just wanted to raise it verbally as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much for this, Chris. And I see, Farzani, you have your hand up again.
Yes, Farzani Badi is speaking. I do have an objection to including this amendments in the Article 4F4. I do not have any objection to the SOAC being accountable and also a review process, but I do believe that it is a grave mistake to insert it where we have suggested it before, and I do ask you to reconsider, and that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fasani. So I guess we have heard from many commenters that if we are going to actually take this step on SOAC accountability, as it has been firmly recommended and supported by commenters, I believe that maybe we should add some kind of language into our final version of the report that, in fact, includes the GAC review. And I would like to, of course, listen to any objections. But first, I would like to go with Steve Del Bianco, who has his hand up.
Thank you, Leon. As one of the folks who worked on the incorporation of the affirmation of commitments reviews into the bylaws, I wanted to remind folks of something that is already in our proposal, and this is in Annex 9, where the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, we always abbreviate that as the ATRT, is given a list of things that it examines when it does an Accountability and Transparency Review. And I'll paste into the chat one of the items that does involve GAC's interaction with the board. It isn't about evaluating whether the GAC itself is transparent or accountable, but only whether the GAC's interaction with the board and recommendations, assessing the role and effectiveness of the GAC. That's what we have in our third reading now for the Affirmation of Commitments ATRT review. And if you wanted to broaden that a bit, and it's not the same thing as an organizational and structural review, I realize that. I'm trying to point out that we do have an aspect of this review. It could even be made stronger to look at not just the way GAC interacts with the board of directors in that way, but how does the GAC interact with the rest of us? What is its role and effectiveness in interacting with the empowered community and working groups, cross-community working groups that we put together? And if we were to do that, I'll paste into the chat a small amendment. It's in brackets right there. It could be done over in the AOC review section, which is recommendation 9, so that we would ask the ATRT, when it gets together every 5 years, that it should do a review of how effective and what the role of the GAC is in interacting with the board and with the whole rest of us in the broader community. So I offer that as one idea to strengthen the scrutiny that we do on GAC's interaction with us, but it isn't, I understand, the same thing as an organizational or structural review. But this is something we've already baked into our recommendations, and we could make it even stronger. Thank you, Leon.
Thank you very much, Steve. I believe that this suggestion that you make is quite interesting and actually constructive. So I would like to call for any objections on adding to our next version of the report this language that Steve has pasted into the chat box. Are there any objections to including this in our report? Okay, so I see no objections. And I see Olga Cavalli's hand is still up, but I guess that is an old hand. Olga, could you please confirm? Yes, thank you. So I see Brett Schaffer's hand is up. Brett?
Hi, thanks, Leon. I'm actually not here to speak for myself. I'm here to speak for Farzi Bhatti. Apparently she made a comment in the chat, and she's not able to speak directly on the phone bridge for some reason. And she says that her comment is getting buried beneath all the GAC discussion. And so I just wanted to offer an opportunity for someone to find that comment and raise it so that it can be voiced. I'm having trouble myself. So if that could be done, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brett. I see that in the notes, Farzani's objection is already recorded, and she has been able to actually share her thoughts twice with the group. So I am not sure what she means by that her comment is getting buried in the GAC discussion, because we already have it in the notes twice, actually. So oh yes, she's acknowledging that it has been actually on record. And so I think that we have a way forward, and the way forward would be to actually make the clarification on the amendment to Article 4, Section 4, and include the suggested language by Steve Del Bianco on our next report, and of course confirm at this point. If there are any objections on dealing with the comments received in the third public comment period as part of our work stream 2 plan. So can I have, please, if there are any objections to addressing the comments received in the public period as part of our work stream 2 plan. Okay, so I see no objections. And with this, I think I will turn back to my co-chair, Thomas, for the next agenda item.
Thank you very much, Leon. So it's now time for us to begin our second reading on the reconsideration process. That's recommendation number 8. We have gone through the points that you find at the beginning of this document during the last call, and they've been confirmed by the group. And this is now to confirm that the group has not, or that there are no new arguments by the group in order to revisit that previous consensus. So we have concluded that the three concerns raised during the comment can be dealt with during the implementation phase. And these are that the request for reconsideration process should not be regarded in isolation, but that it is part of a mechanism or a set of other mechanisms. Then there was a concern raised with respect to the role of the ombudsman, that he should be sufficiently equipped and knowledgeable for substantive evaluations required for this process. Thirdly, there was the point that the reconsideration request must be transparent and fully communicated to all ICANN stakeholders. And these points were regarded as items that can be included during the implementation phase. So let's see whether there's any further need for discussion on this point. If you would like to speak to this point, please make yourself heard. Let me pause for a few more seconds. This is the second reading of Annex 8. The request for reconsideration process. Chavuz. Chavuz, it's your turn. Please do speak. The hand is lowered. Okay, so we are ahead of schedule, which is a good thing. We've made good progress. The next item on the agenda is recommendation number 11. So let me check whether Mathieu is already with us. Because this was one for Mathieu to chair, and Mathieu indicated that he would be joining the meeting a bit later. So he doesn't seem to be on the call, which is why I would suggest that we move on, that we don't take the scheduled break, because that is way too early. And I think everyone is still very, very fresh. Can we please bring up the document on recommendation number 11? And Steve, as a rapporteur for that topic, would you be kind enough to do a quick recap of where we are, and then we go through the remaining questions one by one?
Thank you, Thomas. All of you have in front of you on the Adobe 6 discussion points that we would like to cover today. And the 6 discussion points were arrived at by going over the comments that came in from the 90 groups that submitted public comments, as well as the chartering organization comments that we received. They are arranged in an order that we will soon enough get to the real pivotal questions, number 5 and 6. But along the way, what we have tried to do is address concerns that were raised in the public comment and the chartering works. For instance, if the registry constituency suggested that they had 3 concerns with recommendation 11, and they articulated their concerns in the public comment they submitted. So with that in mind, you'll see that items 1, 2, 3 are meant to address some of those registry constituency concerns, as well as others that were expressed by the IPC and other groups. Number 4 on this list will allow us to dive into some concrete suggestions made by our lawyers, and we'll be able to jump to the next page to do that. And then if we quickly get through 1 through 4, the easy part, we would get to 5, which, as I set it up last week, number 5 is really a judgment call, that those of us in the CCWG community and our chartering works have to make the judgment as to whether requiring the board to have 2 extra votes to reject GAC advice is an appropriate trade-off for requiring the GAC to lock in a very strong consensus method into the bylaws for advice that gets the special treatment. So, Thomas, with that, if it's okay with you, we can go into number 1 first and then just walk through it.
Yes, let's please do that. Any comments on the first item?
The first item, Thomas, is meant to clarify for legal counsel when they draft our bylaws is that nothing about the change we're making in Rec 11 is intended to modify the conditions under which recommendations or obligations for the board to consider and vote on GAC advice. We are simply adding a phrase, and it limits the conditions under which the board and GAC would jump into that special mode of trying to find a mutually acceptable solution. And if any of you want to refresh your memory, you can jump to paragraph 4 on page 4, paragraph 4 on page 4 in this document, and you'll see the bylaws from Article 11J with underlined bold for what the new text is. So, Thomas, anything to add on item 1?
No, I think that was quite comprehensive. Are there any comments from the group on that point?
Why don't we go to number 2 then? Number 2 was a concern that was expressed by many in the public comment that our third draft wasn't strong enough in requiring that a rationale be provided whenever an advisory committee provides formal advice to the board. We had used words like make best efforts to include a rationale, and there was overwhelming comments to say, no, let's make it a requirement for all advisory committees that when they provide advice to the board that they include a rationale. And so this doesn't apply just to the GAC, it's to any advisory committee that advises the board. We also clarified that it would be the board who would determine whether that quote-unquote rationale was adequate for the purposes of the board to exercise its obligations to take into account, and whether the board was going to act on that advice. It knows that it cannot do so in the violation of bylaws. So that rationale, the adequacy of the rationale, is something that the board itself, who's the recipient of the advice, ought to be able to determine. Thomas, any questions about number 2? We're making it a firm requirement in the bylaws.
Thanks, Steve. Cavus has raised his hand. Before moving to Cavus, let me just reiterate for everyone's benefit that to me it's a very important point that we're not asking for a rationale only for the GAC. So there's no special treatment for the GAC. This is a request for all advisory groups to offer a rationale that allows for the board to understand the reasoning behind the advice. I think we've confirmed earlier that it is just appropriate for the advisory group or the respective advisory group to offer information on why they came to the advice that they're issuing. So I think these two components of point number 2 need to be borne in mind when we're having this discussion, because there have been allegations earlier that we would especially single out the GAC. And I think, Steve, you've made very clear that there is no intention whatsoever to create additional burdens for the governmental advisory only. In fact, this is just to add transparency to the whole process. Kevin?
Yes, no problem about providing rationale. But my question to Steve is the second part. The board should determine whether rationale is adequate. That means you have gone two steps. One step is discussing rationale. The other step is discussing the substance of the advice. Suppose that the rationale is not adequate. What would be the next step? Before going into the substance of the advice, the board decides the rationale is not adequate. What they do? They return it back to the GAC, or what they do? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. Pedro?
Thomas, thank you. If you would allow me, I would like to go back to point one again, because, sorry, I missed this. I had actually a clarifying question, because maybe it's my poor comprehension of the English language, but I'm a bit troubled by the last sentence. This recommendation shall not create any new obligation that ICANN is bound to implement any advice that is not rejected by the board. My understanding is that if the advice is not rejected by the board, ICANN is bound to implement it. So I'm a bit confused about the way to, about this wording here, so I'd like to seek clarification on that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Pedro. And I originally intended to allow for Steve to respond to all questions that might be raised, but I guess that since you're going back to the first point, Steve, would you care to respond to that point as well as to Cavus's concern raised earlier?
Hey, thank you, Pedro. The way number one is phrased is in response to concerns that were raised by the intellectual property constituency, who, in their reading of Rec 11, thought that it was creating brand new obligations for implementation. We got our lawyers to confirm that the obligation for ICANN is to duly take into account the GAC advice. That's the obligation in the bylaws. We're doing nothing to change that, to duly take into account. And then if the board determines that it's going to act inconsistently or reject that advice, it needs to have a vote to do so, and after it does so, it needs to explain the rationale and then enter into an obligation to try and find a mutually acceptable solution. So what we're saying with that last sentence, Pedro, is that the way we have structured Recommendation 11 doesn't make any changes relative to the current bylaws about what ICANN's obligations are. This was to remove some doubt that crept in that somehow we were changing the level of obligations that ICANN had by virtue of asking it to make a decision, to determine, to take a decision. And Pedro, you'll see when we get to the second page on our lawyer's advice, our lawyers quite clearly said that the current bylaws say that the board might determine to take an action, but the only way under California law that a board can determine to take an action is by voting. That's how it decides. And all we had done was change the threshold of the voting, but we did not invent a new requirement that the board vote on GAC advice. That has always been there, that the board has to duly take it into account and determine whether it should act consistently with the advice. And we're not making any changes to that sequence of obligations with the bylaws change in Recommendation 11. Now, Cavus, let me turn to your question, which was question two, point two. And you, Cavus, you brought up the second half of the sentence about the board should determine whether the rationale is adequate. We did discuss this last week. The determination of adequacy came up because some on this group said, well, what is adequate? Do we need a definition of adequate? And I think that the sentiment of the group was that the board itself is the recipient of the advice. And if the board determined that the rationale was not adequate for it to take action, to duly consider the advice, that the board would politely request that ESAC, would you please give us a better rationale? Would you explain in detail what you mean here? Or they might turn back to the GAC and say, we don't believe the rationale answers some grave concerns we might have with regard to the bylaws. I'm just giving you examples. So the board itself would say, this rationale is not adequate for us to make the decision. on how to act on this advice, so we're going to ask you for clarification. So I think that's an informal process, and it's not one that I believe we need to put into the bylaws. Thank you, Tommy.
Thanks very much, Steve. And for those who are on the audio bridge only, there's an interesting discussion going on in the chat window. Actually, Bruce, our board liaison, is pointing out that the board sometimes struggles with the sequence of happenings during ICANN meetings when the board meets the GAC early in the week, and the GAC then later publishes its communique, and there have been previous instances where the reasoning for the GAC advice was not clear to the board. So there seems to be traction for the idea of the board meeting with the GAC after they have issued their communique in order to be able to discuss things and be more constructive. So I think these are all positive signs. And please do forgive me. I'm paraphrasing what's been said in the chat, so I hope that I've accurately reflected the spirit in which this discussion in the chat window was held. We are still discussing the second question with respect to the rationale. And Olga's hand is up. Olga, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. Well, I had similar concerns to my colleague Cavus, and somehow Pedro triggered the same question to me. I am not sure if I understood the explanation. As Pedro said, my English is also limited, and I'm not a lawyer, so this is extremely challenging for me. But as far as I could get from the comments made by Steve, this is not changing much. So maybe the last sentences in 1 and 2 could be taken out, especially the one about the rationale. That's extremely confusing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Olga. It is my understanding that we all agree on the idea of what we're trying to encapsulate in these points. It seems like we haven't been able to remove uncertainties with what is meant by this, and I think that the discussion that we just had is quite enlightening. Steve, if I may land you with additional work, maybe you can add 1 or 2 sentences along the lines of what you've been discussing, you've been explaining to the report, to shed more light on the areas of concern. But it is my impression that we're making good progress on this, and I hope that Cavus and Greg can confirm this. I would suggest that we hear Cavus and Greg, and then we turn to a volunteering board member, hopefully, to see what their position on this point would be. Cavus.
I think with the explanation given by Steve, this does not mean that the ICANN reject or start the rejection of the project. They ask clarification, and that is a positive point, that clarifying the situation, because sometimes the GAC advice is more or less ambiguous and so on and so forth, because they want to have consensus. I think seeking clarification is a normal process. I have no objection if the sense is only seeking clarification. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus, and thanks for confirming that we're obviously getting closer to resolution on this. Greg.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. Since Steve noted that the last sentence in the item 1 was inspired by the intellectual property constituency's comments, just to speak briefly in support of it, I think it's important to us and to others who have agreed with us that if there's GAC advice that is neither carried out by the board nor inconsistent actions taken after the appropriate vote by the board, that advice is essentially dormant. Or inchoate, and the board has the option at any time afterwards to either follow it and move in accordance with it, or to act inconsistently with it based on taking that vote. So there's, that's the way I think it's operated up until this point in time, and that shouldn't change. So if there isn't, and so I think the basic point is that we are continuing the status quo, and that the phrasing that's been put into the draft bylaw itself isn't intended to change that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. And as indicated earlier, is there any board member on this call that wishes to speak to these points? A word of confirmation that we're on the right path is also much appreciated and welcome. Let me then ask for objections on these two points. There doesn't seem to be any, but we will again ask for objections when we take stock after having gone through all the five questions. So that allows us to move to the third question. Over to you, Steve.
The third one is in response to something that was raised initially by the registry constituency in their public comments, but it was echoed by a few others. The registries put it this way. They said one requirement to support Rec 11 was that any GAC advice accepted by the board or any mutually agreeable solution agreed by the board and the GAC must be consistent with ICANN bylaws. That struck a lot of us as obvious because one of the basic principles we have here is that the community or any aggrieved party has the standing to challenge the board action or inaction as being inconsistent with ICANN's bylaws. And if the community, the empowered community, brought the challenge, met our threshold, then ICANN pays the legal fees, if any, for the community to be able to bring that challenge. And that has nothing to do with where the board's action or inaction came from. Any advisory committee providing advice to the board is unconstrained as to what they can advise the board. But our bylaws bound the board of directors. They tell the board of directors, you need to be consistent with the bylaws, and we've created a new ability to challenge the board anytime it acts inconsistent with the bylaws. So the point of three is a clarification that I don't think needs to make it into Article 11 of the bylaws. It's already well reflected in the entire IRP section, which refers extensively to the core values and mission statement and the rest of the bylaws. So we did discuss this last week. We took improvements from Malcolm and from Cavus and from Alan Greenberg to the language here, that it's any aggrieved party or the empowered community will have standing to bring an IRP to challenge whether a board action or inaction is inconsistent with its bylaws, and that would hold whether or not it was acting on GAC advice, SAC advice, or on just the whim of the moment. So that clarification was, we believe, essential to address at least one constituency's concern, but I know that it was echoed by others. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Steve. Let's open it up for discussion. Malcolm.
Sorry, can you hear me? Thank you. I support this. The statement that it's inconsistent with the bylaws, the point that's being addressed here is the fear that somebody might interpret a requirement to act on advisory committee advice to take precedence over other aspects of the bylaws that might otherwise prevent the board from acting in that way. And the intent of this is to ensure that this that any such requirement isn't intended to modify or supersede other aspects of the bylaws. So I support this, but when we say mustn't act in a way that is inconsistent with the bylaws, that should be understood as meaning the bylaws, other than the clause that requires the board to act in accordance with the advisory committee advice. I'm sure that the lawyers are perfectly capable of implementing that in a way that works well and possibly even may not need particular additional language, but I hope that that is clear from the language for the lawyers.
Thanks, Malcolm. And as you know, our lawyers are attending the call, so they take good note of your statement, I'm sure, but it's also captured in the notes that staff take. So I'm quite confident that your suggestion or your encouragement in terms of drafting will make its way to the implementation phase. Any further interventions with respect to this point? Greg.
I'll state only briefly that I think this probably is an echo of concerns about the changes and amendments that we're making to the mission and core values, and this, you know, may be more appropriately taken up there than here. I mean, clearly, the ICANN cannot act outside its scope and mission, but the issue really is whether advice that GAC has given in the past or may wish, to give in the future that it believes is consistent with the mission as it has stood for X number of years is somehow now going to be prohibited. We may end up revisiting that discussion on that point. So that's why I believe it's even, relevant here and for that matter, why it's worth saying and confirming. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg, and let me congratulate you on this concise statement. I couldn't resist to say that. Thanks very much, Greg. And as you rightfully point out, there is a link to the mission discussion. I think we should bear your point in mind when we continue the discussion on the mission. So it looks like we do have consensus on this third point. So let me ask whether there are any objections to confirming this third point. There doesn't seem to be any. And let's now move to the fourth item. Over to you, Steve.
Thank you, Thomas. The fourth item is the last of our very easy ones, and it references the next two pages of the document you have in front of you, where we have pasted in advice that Rosemary and Holly and their colleagues sent over to us over the weekend. Rosemary and Holly were asked to look at some of the concerns that were raised about, does this require voting? What is the obligation of the board? What does the steps mean for the Rec 11 changes? And very grateful that Holly and Rosemary came up with a set of clarifications, and that the fact that they were happening in parallel with the decisions we were making last week on the calls is probably a reinforcement that we're on the right track here. So if you're able to scroll, please, to the top of page 2, you'll see that in the yellow text there is the comments from Rosemary and Holly. And then in red, what I did there is try to summarize an email discussion list that occurred since the weekend over this notion of the phrase duly taken into account. And that is the obligation for the board of directors of ICANN when it receives GAC advice is to duly take it into account. And that has been in the bylaws for over a decade. And nothing we are putting in Recommendation 11 changes the effect of duly taken into account. Recommendation 11 only addresses the board's obligation to go and try and find a mutually acceptable solution, and only for the GAC advice that was approved with a formal approval without a single formal objection from any country. So we are not affecting the duly taken into account at all, and therefore we don't believe there's any need to change the phrase duly taken into account. And Holly and Rosemary were good enough to offer some other ways to perhaps phrase it, but there's not a significant ambiguity, and we're not making a change on something that's worked fairly well for the last 10 years. So our suggested reply to that is not to change Recommendation 11. And then Holly and Rosemary went on to find that there's really no meaningful legal distinction between voting and determining to take an action. I think we covered that a few moments ago on page 1. This notion of Rec 11 doesn't create any new obligations to vote. The voting is how the board determines to take actions. And then Holly and Rosemary went on to discuss potential ways of rephrasing it, as well as an analysis of what they believe Rec 11 would lead to in terms of a sequence of requirements. And I do believe in both cases that their clarification is helpful and should help to address some of the concerns that were raised in the public documents. So, Thomas, there isn't any recommended action on Rec. 11 coming out of the lawyer's memo. It's extremely helpful in clarifying things, and I don't believe we need to make any changes to Rec. 11 just from what's on that page.
Thanks very much, Steve. And let me take this opportunity to thank our lawyers for being very helpful with this. And we've carefully assessed their input. Nonetheless, at this stage, the recommendation is to not make any changes based on that legal memo. And let's see whether there are any objections to proceeding on that basis. Cavus, you have raised your hand. Please. Cavus, your hand is lowered. I'm not sure whether you are passing. Cavus, the hand is up again.
Can you hear me, please?
Yes, we can hear you now.
I said that if we do not get into the legal interpretation, what does it mean determine and voting? What is the due account? What is the taking into account duly? I have no problem to leave it as it was before. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus, and thanks for supporting the suggestion that Steve made, i.e., to leave the language as it is after having assessed the lawyer's memo. So, with that, I don't see any objection to proceeding as Steve suggested. In fact, there is support in the chat to that recommendation that Steve made, and that allows us to move to the next point. Steve.
Number five is the discussion of the two-thirds board threshold, which would be 11 votes of a board of directors of 16. In order for the board to reject GAC advice, if that GAC advice was approved in general agreement of GAC members in the absence of any formal objection. The present bylaws, as written today, say nothing about the nature of the GAC advice that triggers the board's obligation. And, of course, it allows the board to determine to take an action according to the majority. And with a 16-member board of directors, that is 9 votes. So the effective number 5, and 5 is the what we'll call, a compromise position that was arrived at on the American Thanksgiving, November 28th, just before we published the third draft. And it was an attempt to recognize that in Dublin, the GAC brought up the notion that the two-thirds threshold to reject its advice was quite important to the GAC. It's part of the Dublin communique. And this compromise here increased from simple majority to two-thirds, but it also raised to the strong formal consensus level that the GAC has in its operating principles today, but is not in ICANN's bylaws. So the trade here, the exchange, the compromise, was that we would tell our board of directors that an obligation to discuss and try to find a mutually acceptable solution would only apply when GAC advice was approved with broad support in the absence of a formal objection. That would avoid placing our board of directors ever in a situation where it had to arbitrate on advice where a significant number of governments didn't support the advice. It would have to be advice that was broadly supported without an objection to trigger this obligation. And by raising the standard of the GAC decision consensus, raising that standard for purposes of this obligation, number 5 brings up the recommendation in Rec. 11 that the board would require 11 votes instead of 9 to reject that advice and trigger that obligation. So there's been much discussion about whether the language was appropriate, whether we had created new obligations. I hoped to dispose of all that in items 1, 2, 3, and 4 on this page. And having done that, when you come to number 5, it's the simple question about whether that's an appropriate threshold, 11 votes, given that the GAC would then be required to adopt its advice under that strong level of consensus. And I did note in here in the last sentence, note for all of you that the existing bylaws of ICANN do not make any reference to to the degree of consensus that GAC advice would need to have to trigger the special obligation of ICANN's board of directors. So, Thomas, what we've done so far is to tee this up in a way that we can just discuss the merits of the extra two votes in exchange for the very formal consensus agreement, and not worry about whether we have introduced new obligations in any other way. And by teeing it up that way, I hope that we can have a reasonable conversation on number five, and if five is supported, we don't need to get to number six. So I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks very much, Steve. And I think you've done a magnificent job in explaining the difference between the current interaction between the board and the GAC, and in pointing out how minute, if I may say so, the changes are. Let's also refresh our memories on how we got where we are with this recommendation, and particularly with this point. We have had numerous meetings over over months. We had special meetings, particularly focusing on this very stress test 18 related threshold question, and this is the outcome of month-long community deliberations. And I anticipate that those who are queuing in order to speak will make reference to arguments that have previously been exchanged on the role of the GAC and a perceived shift of balance. But let's bear in mind that this is actually the outcome of a community process. This is a recommendation in its which in its current form has been supported by chartering organizations, and two chartering organizations have remained silent on this in a sense that they have not rejected the consensus, or they have not rejected the recommendation. So I would really like to ask all of you, when taking the microphone, to keep that in the back of your mind. We will not be able to make everyone happy with this recommendation, but this is what the multi-stakeholder model is truly about, finding compromise and finding solutions and ways forward that everyone can live with. And to me, the lack of rejection is a clear indication of the willingness to live with a solution that is not ideal. So having said that, let's move to the queue, and the first one to speak is Caboose.
But there was already said, but I would like to add one argument. If there would be in future any hope that GAC support this recommendation, it is for the two-third majority. If you take it out, there would be very little hope that in future GAC make any consensus to this recommendation. At this stage, there is no consensus, but still I hope that they will do, provided that these two-thirds remain, because this is the major and most important element of this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. Alan.
Thank you very much. The ALEC has not formally discussed this, but from my personal point of view, I think it's a marvelous compromise. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Paul.
Yes, hi. Well, it is an unfortunate compromise, I think, one that was adopted at a meeting that did not that was not representative. It was a straw poll on the American Thanksgiving, as Robin has pointed out in the chat. But I think I would just restrict myself to making the very simple point. It is a change. It is a change that empowers the GAC from where it is today. If the GAC were to want to seek advice in the board today, it would have to operate under its own operating procedures by full consensus, and the board would reject that on a majority vote if it chose to. There is no getting around the fact that we are granting greater authority to the board, to the GAC, in doing this, and that that actually contravenes the NTIA's requirements that we avoid increasing the power of governmental authorities. Now, we can dress it up all that we want and say that, you know, perhaps the GAC could have changed its own operating procedures, and of course it can. But from reality today to reality tomorrow, it's a change, and I can almost hear the objections from NTIA, from Congress, to this change. I think of no better way of circuiting the transition than to adopt this recommendation. I realize I am sure that that will not carry the day in this discussion, but the record should reflect that if we go forward now, we do so knowing full well that we are risking the transition altogether over placating the views of what I perceive to be a minority of GAC members.
Thanks very much, Paul, and certainly it's perfectly appropriate for you to put your concerns on the record. Let me just, for the sake of completion, of completeness, add to that that we have worked on ways to improve ICANN's accountability for the whole community. So the role of all component parts or constituent parts of the community has changed. And in doing so, we have given all SOs and ACs the opportunity to have a slightly different mandate than the mandate they have now. And we've discussed this previously, but I think that the vast majority of this group is of the view that we're not changing the relative balance of powers inside the community. Let's move to Greg then.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. Speaking in this instance, in my role as president of the intellectual property constituency, and, you know, which you know is a subpart of the GNSO, and I think our views are, you know, expressed as Keith has you know, come in and summarized the GNSO's views, but the IPC as a whole is opposed to this change and believes that it would tilt the playing field and give and further a message of tilting the playing field and of a presumption of acceptance that goes beyond what's there. I'm not going to make any predictions about what happens in Washington. I'm not a beltway person, but I do think that it is a change, and we do think it is a change. I was on the Thanksgiving call, and it was skewed in terms of population on that call. And also the very last issue to be solved, I think we were all suffering from what we in the corporate law business call deal fatigue by that time, and all wanted to get away. So sin in haste and repent at leisure may apply to this. You know, last, I would say that this did happen on a day which is associated both with turkeys and with stuffing, and I think that perhaps there's a little bit of the taste of both of that on this. As much as I, you know, love a good compromise, do not see this one as one where that where compromise can be found in this. The two-thirds is just too meaningful. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. Since you are the second person to comment on the meeting where we discussed stress test 18, and I think there was also one comment in the chat making reference to that. I would like to ask Mathieu to provide some information on that very meeting to hopefully shed some light on how things came about at that point. Mathieu?
Thank you, Thomas. I was just checking the notes of this meeting number 70, and to confirm that there were 21 members out of 27 at that attending that meeting, plus 43 participants, and certainly not any group being overrepresented at any rate. A significant number of the U.S.-based group members and participants were also attending, and so I think it was not an unusual meeting by any rate, and I would like to, if my notes are correct, I don't think it's correct to say there was polling. because there was a call for any objection, and there was no objection in the call. And later on, we had obviously a minority view on this when we finalized the third report from Robin Gross. And then you know what the comments look like. So I think in terms of process, it's important to remember this fact. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. Let's move on in the queue. I think Cavus's hand is an old hand. So let's move to Malcolm now.
Thank you, Thomas. Okay, in line with your rules of order, I'm going to restrict myself not to to avoiding old arguments and simply pointing out things that directly address the things that you and Mathieu and Steve Del Bianco have just said. Firstly, Steve Del Bianco gave numerical changes, that this would be a change from 9 to 11 votes. Now, I understand that Steve is just trying to make it more simple and more real for people to understand how the votes are at the moment. Actually, that is not accurate. It is a change from a 50% vote to a two-thirds vote, which, according to the board's current composition, happens to be 9 to 11. But if the board composition should change, as may happen at any time, including, for example, at any moment by the resignation or incapacitation of a director, then the calculation would change. It is entirely foreseeable, of course, in the future that the structure of the relative board weights between bodies may change, that some bodies may get voting rights that don't have them at the moment, and so on and so forth. So this is a vote change from a majority to a two-thirds position. And certainly characterizing it as a change from 9 to 11 rather than majority to two-thirds does ignore the viewpoints that some have expressed, and I am one of them, that the real problem in this is not merely the change in the voting thresholds, but actually the signal that it sends that things should be to the board members, to each individual board member, that the expectation here is to comply unless there is an extraordinary reason not to go along with the GAC advice. And that is a change that this signals by moving from a majority to a supermajority. That is obfuscated by saying 9 to 11. Okay, Thomas, you have also said that there have been no objections from any of the chartering organizations to this point, and that you have urged us to accept that we should consider that as highly significant, a degree of support for this. I must say, I think at least in the case of the GNSO, you are seriously misreading that. The GNSO has said very specifically that it is not giving final approval or a final rejection to any of the point recommendations that have been raised at this time because they have not been finalized, and it has given feedback instead. And the feedback it has given on this point is that there is very widespread opposition to this within the GNSO, and it is unlikely to be able to be something that they will be able to do other than oppose if this goes through in this form. So I think it is. I think your reading of the GNSO position there that you have just given to the consideration of this working group, Thomas, really mistakes where GNSO lies on that, and that needs to be taken firmly into account. Finally, regarding your point, Thomas, that this was the result of a bottom-up process that is a settled community process. You didn't quite say settled, but you invited us to believe or to take the view that this is the ultimate outcome of a community process that really must be respected. But actually, this is the outcome of the decision in a single meeting, and a single meeting that took that decision without even having given formal advance notice that this particular proposal was going to be on the table in that meeting. So the feedback that has been received in response to this, the negative feedback, is the first opportunity that has really been available to people to say no. Now, I understand, Thomas, that you wish to wrap this up, and that things that have been said and arrived at and achieved consensus many times within this working group, you don't wish us to reopen. And I support that. I very much hope when it comes to the mission discussion that you will continue to apply the same standard to that, to the prohibition on the regulation, which has survived three successive drafts of this community's report and therefore should have the highest level of threshold before we overturn it. But I don't think this particular one deserves the same treatment because this is the first opportunity that people have had to object to it. So I think that the level of support that you are asking for in order to overturn this in the introduction that you just gave, Thomas, is inappropriate. I think that we should take those points into account. I've tried to restrict that to the rules of order that you've given. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Malcolm. There would be a lot to say in response to what you were mentioning. Let me just confine myself to one point, and that is that I did not say that there was no opposition to this recommendation. I said that there was no rejection of this recommendation, which is a significant difference. So I think that my reading of the GNSO's response was appropriate. Let's move on with the queue, which I'd like to close after Cavus. Next is Olga.
Thank you, Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My comments are somehow aligned with the comments made by my colleague Cavus. You may recall that this idea of the two-thirds threshold came from a GAC advice, which means that the GAC had consensus about this two-thirds threshold, which Argentina, of course, supports. And just as a general comment for the whole participants in the call, this is a very important issue for the GAC. So if we all want this to be moving forward with government support, this two-thirds threshold is a very important, and we should keep it. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Olga. Robin.
Hi, this is Robin Gross. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you, Robin.
Okay. I will try to be brief because you've heard a lot of this before, and I just want to support Paul's comments and Greg's comments and Malcolm's comments and others who are trying to raise the flag here that this is a big problem, this particular recommendation. This is a significant empowerment of governments that came together at the very end of a very long process and wasn't in our earlier draft proposals. When there was a similar proposal to this out as a board public comment in 2013, it was unanimously rejected by the community. FADI swore to Congress last year that proposals just like this were, quote, off the table, and here somehow we've put it into the table, back on the table. I agree that this seriously risks the success of the entire transition and, just marching forward but without dealing with this concern, it will be a big mistake for the success of the overall proposal and the success of the overall transition. This is something that GAC hasn't even said that it wants in its comments. Again, this is another situation where if the GAC can't even come to an agreement amongst itself that it needs this, I don't understand how it gets into our proposal at all, even if one would agree with the substance of it, just simply on a procedural point, it just doesn't make sense. So I will leave it at that, but again, NCSG will continue to raise very strong objections to this recommendation as probably the most important one to kill the whole proposal. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Robin. And I'd like to ask our speakers to be as brief as they can. Next is Keith.
Sorry, Thomas. This is Keith. I had to get off mute. Thank you very much. I've typed into chat what I'm going to say here, but I wanted to read it just to make sure everybody understands the, I think, seriousness and implications from the GNSO perspective. Let me preface my comments by noting that the registry stakeholder group, of which I am a part, said that it could support the two-thirds with the inclusion of three additional criteria. And it appears from our previous discussions that those three additional criteria are likely to be met. So the registries, I can say, appreciate that. But I want to note that that those three additional criteria may not be enough to sway the rest of the constituent parts of the GNSO. So my comment was that the GNSO comments and the individual comments submitted by the GNSO's constituent parts make clear that there is majority opposition to inclusion of the two-thirds threshold, particularly in the context of the GAC participating as decisional in the community mechanism. And if the two-thirds threshold were to remain, I believe the GNSO would likely oppose Recommendation 11. The GNSO supports incorporating the definition of GAC consensus for board obligations in the absence of formal objection, as required by NTIA, but does not support the increase of board obligations to two-thirds. If the two-third threshold were removed and returned to a simple majority, I believe the GNSO would support Recommendation 11. The GNSO will vote and will require a simple majority of each house, that's contracted party house and non-contracted party house. And there is not currently majority support in either house to agree to two-thirds. So I'm just putting this down and putting this out there so people understand that the GNSO as a whole today does not support the inclusion of two-thirds. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Keith. Please don't add yourself to the queue anymore. You know, I had previously closed the queue, but since we haven't heard from Andrew, we're going to hear him. Just in terms of process, we're going to listen to what Pedro and Andrew have to say, and then we're going to have our 10-minute break. And after that, we're going to continue our conversation. Pedro.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Thank you, Thomas. Well, when listening to some colleagues that talked before me, not all of them, but some of them, it reminded me of an expression in Spanish, actually, that says, si hay gobierno, soy contra, which translates to, if there's government, I'm against, which, well, in the context that is normally used, basically means no matter the situation, no matter the subject under discussion, if there are government involved, I'm always against. So unfortunately, that's my perception. That kind of, I would say, preconceived judgment in regard to government has been present in some viewpoints expressed in this group, and well, according to my view, it hasn't allowed that discussion evolve as they should, and especially with respect to stress test 18, and more specifically to the full consensus requirement related to the stress test and also to the two-thirds threshold. I won't talk about the full consensus requirement, although it's something we are not in agreement with, and we have rejected Recommendation 11 because of that. We still think that stress test 18 is not necessary. But with regards to two-thirds threshold, I think that issue of the, you know, that I mentioned about the preconceived judgment also applies. I mean, as you know, PDP recommendations can be rejected based on the two-thirds threshold. It sounds reasonable, and I think there's broad community support for that. I mean, at least I don't see any objections, discussion about this. But why is it so problematic when this same two-thirds applies to GAC advice? I mean, why are the two-thirds perceived as an increase of power when exactly the same criterion is applied to other constituencies as well. So to me, I mean, it means it seems that the GAC has been unfairly targeted in this discussions, and I think this is a result of an extremely negative preconception of government, and that has unfortunately prevailed in some viewpoints that have been expressed here. Thank you.
Thanks, Pedro. Andrew had raised his hand, and after Pedro's intervention, we're going to have our break.
Oh, you probably didn't see this, but in the chat I said that in the interest of time, I'd just send a note to the list.
Thanks so much for that. And with this, we can now have our 10-minute break, so we're going to reconvene at 20:47 and continue our conversation. Thank you so much. And we can pause the recording, please.
tormenta tropical.
Tropical. País tropical. Comenzó a no ser los dedos. ¿Qué pasa? ¿Por qué está?
Bueno, estoy preocupado. Why porque no me gustaría que...
No, no, no.
We will continue in a few seconds. Can we get the recording restarted, please? The recording has been restarted, and I got word that Jorge Cancio, who is only on the audio bridge, wants to speak. Jorge? Jorge, are you on the call?
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please proceed.
Okay, sorry for the inconvenience. I'm in a train, so it's a bit difficult, and I apologize if you hear too much noises. I was listening to the conversation, and I was a bit struck by the apocalyptical tone of some of the interventions, and also by other aspects. So I would like to comment that, first of all, we are talking, when we talk about recommendation 11 and the stress test 18, we are talking about a deal which was struck in the community after very long and detailed conversations with many different proposals going back and forth, and with a lot of effort from all interested parties to reach a good compromise. In the end, this deal or this compromise is so bad or so good, it depends on how you look at it, that both sides, and I mean the GNSO and the GAC, which are the ones most directly concerned, are quite divided or quite unhappy to a certain degree on the deal. But I think that it's meaningless if now one part of those who made the compromise says that they would support compromise if only the parts which interest them are left within the deal, and the parts which don't interest them are taken out. I think that when you have a compromise, it's a package, and you cannot pick and choose what you like most. So I think it should be clear that the two-thirds is as important to the deal as the full consensus requirement enshrined in the bylaws. So I would really urge colleagues not to reopen this issue, or not to fall into apocalyptical tones, because this is a compromise we reached in the community, which still isn't liked by both poles or by both extremes in the discussion, but which probably is the best we could get. And also I would like to urge colleagues to think over their principles or their intuitive negative attitude to the GAC and to the government, because after all these months of discussions, I think that they should know better. They should know better that there's no hidden danger, that it's one part of the community which is willing to engage, which is doing its best to work with other parts of the community, and which was part of this deal as it was part of many other deals we've been making along the last months. So thank you. Thank you for your patience, and this was what I wanted to share with you.
Thanks very much, Jorge. As you stated, there are fundamental disagreements on this point. Objections have been raised, and applying our usual working methods, we would discuss alternatives that have been suggested by the group, and that leads us to point number six on the screen in front of you. And I would like you, Steve, to kindly introduce that, and then we're going to discuss this alternative suggestion.
Thanks, Thomas. So those of you on the phone, just please scroll to the first page again. We have been discussing and debating the relative merits of number five. And number five is, again, what we put in the publication of Rec 11. It was this Thanksgiving compromise. Number six reflects an alternative to number five. Number six suggests that the present threshold for the GAC, which is the absence of any objection in its operating procedures, would be brought into the bylaws. But under the present board threshold of a simple majority, to reject that advice and enter into the obligation to try and find a mutually acceptable solution. So what number six comes from is two places. It comes from a significant number of comments received on our third draft, where commenters indicated they did not support the two-thirds, but did support locking into the bylaws the strong consensus requirement that the GAC uses today in its own operating principles. The other place number six comes from is the stress test work party, who over a year ago, when it was putting together stress tests and got to number 18, the stress test work party published in February of 2015 draft language to address stress test 18. And that draft language included the phrase that we would indicate a definition of consensus for stress test 18, and that only consensus advice from the GAC would merit the special treatment, and that we would amend ICANN bylaws to give due deference only to GAC consensus advice while adding a definition of consensus. Now, that was about a year ago, and the rest of number six is meant to suggest that it puts part of it in there, as Jorge just said. It puts part of what's in number five, but not both parts that were agreed to in November. Number six alone drew a number of objections from governments, and I believe that's what led to governments coming up with advice in Dublin, where they emphasized many principles that was important to the GAC, but also brought the two-thirds back, which hadn't been talked about for over a year. Because a lot of you do remember that the GAC had wanted a two-thirds requirement as a standalone back in October of 2014. The community spoke quite loudly that was not an appropriate standalone concession to GAC advice, and we rejected that bylaws change, and the board took it off the table. Many of you have referred to that as something that Fadi Shahadi said to the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee in February, but that was a standalone proposal. In number five, it was meant to be a trade, an exchange, a quid pro quo. So number six, Thomas, is not part of a package. Number six is a distinct alternative to number five that preserves the strong consensus in the absence of an objection, but does not change the board's threshold. It would still be nine votes or a simple majority. Thank you, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Steve. Let's hear views from the group on that point number six. Statement of support. Objections to that way forward, or proposed way forward. Paul, and then Brett.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously this is more consistent with my own views. I suspect that it, too, will hear great objection from Jorge and Pedro and Olga. So I am intervening both to express support for number six as my preferred alternative, and then to ask you and or Mateo to advise me what process you intend to follow for resolving this tension, since I do not see it as answerable, and I do not see it as resolvable by continued discussion. So on the merits, I support number six completely, and substantive and procedurally, I ask you if you have a way forward.
Thanks, Paul. We will propose a way forward when we take stock of this conversation, but let's hear others that have put themselves in the queue. So Brett is next.
Thank you, Matthew. I assume that this conversation is also incorporating paragraph 5, which is very closely related to point 6 in regards to the subject of consensus advice from the GAC. Paragraph 5, which is on page 4 of the document in the Adobe, says that the Government Advisory Committee has the autonomy to refine its operating procedures to specify how objections are raised and considered. For example, disallowing a single country to continue an objection on the same issue if no other countries will join in an objection. And then when transmitting that advice to the board, the Government Advisory Committee has an obligation to confirm lack of any formal objection. My objection here is the for example clause in the parentheses, which seems to approvingly give an example or a path for the GAC to provide advice to the board and circumvent the very consensus requirement that we're requiring in the paragraph above it, the suggested bylaw text. And I think that example should be taken out specifically because it is a contradictory, or it seems to contravene the very intent of what we're trying to do here. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Brett. Kavu? Kavu, it's your turn. Please do speak. There seem to be audio issues for Kavu's, which is why I suggest we move to Olga first and then get back to Kavu's. Olga? Can I ask somebody in the group to just...
Do you hear me, please?
Yes, we can hear you now. Yes.
Yes, please. I said that number 6 alone is not an alternative to number 5, because number 5 is together with stresses 18. Number 6 is an alternative if we have clearly suppressed stresses 18. Could Steve please kindly clarify that before we mention our support for 6 or not? Thank you.
Shall I clarify, Thomas?
Please do.
Yeah, thank you, Thomas. It's Steve DelBianco, the original author of Stress Test 18. Either 5 or 6 are responsive to Stress Test 18. Stress Test 18 said, wow, look at this. The bylaws don't make any mention that GAC advice getting the special treatment has to be consensus GAC advice. It makes no mention at all. And it could suck the board of ICANN into having to arbitrate among governments who have divided opinion on their advice if the GAC should change to simple majority. So stress test 18 has to be addressed, and NTIA insisted on that as well on 3 separate occasions. Kavus, number 5 addresses stress test 18 one way, and number 6 addresses it a different way. But they are both satisfactory at ensuring that ICANN's board would not be forced into arbitrating among a divided set of governments giving advice that the board had to figure out a way to navigate.
Thanks very much, Steve. Looks like Olga still has audio issues. She mentioned in the chat that she has a similar question to the one that Kavus asked, so we can take that resolved. I'm not sure whether Brett and Paul's hands are old hands. I think they are. So the hands are lowered. Any further interventions on that point? Steve.
Yeah, thank you. This is Steve DelBianco. Brett Schaefer is making a point that is wholly sensible from Brett's perspective, but is potentially confusing to many on this call. Brett was respecting to paragraph 5, which is several pages into this document. He wasn't speaking about point number 5 on the discussion on page 1. Brett was bringing up the notion that we acknowledge in paragraph 5 that the GAC, just like any advisory committee or SO, can make its own rules about how it comes to decisions, and it can do so. So, for instance, the GAC could come up with some sort of rules on how an objection is carried for how many days or how many iterations of the voting that happens in the GAC. That's none of actually our business. We just need to make sure that the board of ICANN understands if there's been any formal objections, because if there have been, then it wouldn't merit the special treatment under item 5 or item 6. So, Brett, that language was not intended to go into the bylaws. It's simply an explanation, and I'm glad it's there because it points out the fact that any advisory committee can create rules and procedures about how it does things, but ultimately, if advice is given to the board, it's going to have to include a rationale, and there will have to be an indication that there were no formal objections if it is coming from the GAC.
Thanks very much, Steve. I see no further hands raised. So with that, we should end our conversation on this recommendation number 11 for today. We can confirm that we have reached agreement on points number 1 to 4. We do not have consensus on points number 5 or 6, which is why we are going to poll on this during the next meeting. So we will put that in the agenda. As you know, polling amongst members of the CCWG is something that is foreseen in our charter. We have indicated at the very beginning of this process that we would try to merely work on a consensus basis in this group, and that we would only use polling, i.e. the only place where there is a distinction between members and participants as a matter of last resort. We do see no other alternative than escalating to that method of reaching a decision inside this group, which is unfortunate. We would have preferred to avoid that. But we will need to bring this discussion to a close, and therefore please do be prepared for polling at the upcoming meeting. Please ensure your participation at the next meeting so that we have a good turnout of members in order to be able to conduct the polling. One thing's for sure, we can't leave this item twisting in the wind, so we need to bring this to a close, and it is perfectly appropriate for this group to continue discussions on this item between today and the next meeting, and maybe some of you feel encouraged to try working on further compromising on this point in order to avoid the polling, but this is where we are today. So with that, we can close this agenda item, and I would like to hand over to Mathieu for the next point.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Mathieu Veil speaking, and I feel I owe the group an apology for showing up late at this meeting and only taking the floor when it comes to AOB. So that sounds a little awkward. But I think there's been a lot of progress made today from what I read in the notes, and it's perfectly expected, and we've been there before, to come to assess that there's some diverging views on this recommendation 11. I think I still have a lot of hope that our group's ability to find compromise, even in difficult polarized situations, will once again show up. I'd like to hear whether there's any other business that anyone wants to address. The next call is scheduled for February the 2nd, Chris, as you're mentioning in the chat. And I'm seeing no other business, and as a consequence, I think we can adjourn this call, and our next call is on February the 2nd. Thank you very much, everyone, and have a good day, night, wherever you are. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.